across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 7:06. Nice to have you here on this Thursday morning, September 12th, 2024. And coming up in just a few minutes here, we will be talking to Judge Susan Crawford, a candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court. Not this November, next April. Remember, we turn right around and we have another big spring election here in Wisconsin. So no election fatigue is allowed. Stand by. You'll want to hear more about how very important this state Supreme Court race is. Then later in the hour, we have our weekly Women Win Wisconsin segment powered by our friends at Motherhood for Good. You know, Motherhood for Good took over the segment when Dr. Kristen Lyerly had to move on to other adventures, like running for Congress. And she happens to be the candidate that we're focused on this week. So the whole segment kind of comes full circle today as she talks about her run for Congress in the 8th Congressional District. And then we normally talk to Luke Mathers on Thursdays, but this week we've got a special guest at 7:50, Earl Ingram, whose show is heard right after this one on some parts of the Civic Media Radio Network. So it'll be nice to visit with Earl and learn more about him and his show coming up. Along the way, as always, 855-75-CIVIC is the way to reach us by phone or by text. We are happy to see them here and pass them along where appropriate. So let's see, Brittany is off today. So let me tell you that over at the bus stop right now, it's 54 degrees here in Chippewa Falls. Hayward's at 50, Park Falls 51, Wausau 54. Green Bay, 54. La Crosse is 59 right now. Wisconsin Rapids, 53. It's 56 in Oshkosh, and it's 54 in both Madison and in Waukesha. Green Bay Packer coach Matt LaFleur says he's still not ruling out the possibility that Jordan Love could play Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts, the home opener at Lambeau Field this Sunday afternoon, as the quarterback recovers from a knee injury that has kept him from practicing. Love injured his medial collateral ligament Friday near the end of the Packers' 34-29 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles in Brazil. LaFleur said Love doesn't necessarily have to practice this week to be ready to play on Sunday, but LaFleur says he does have to be cleared. In the meantime, backup quarterback Malik Willis is preparing for the likelihood that he will start a game for Green Bay less than 3 weeks after the Packers acquired him from the Tennessee Titans. Willis's only three previous career starts came as a rookie with Tennessee. Willis did not top 100 yards passing in any of those three games. And the Brewers were the subject of a shellacking last night in San Francisco as the Giants beat them up 13-2. That three-game series is going to wrap up tonight in San Francisco. You can tune into the pregame starting at 8:10, first pitch at 8:40 on Civic Media stations WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and WISS in Oshkosh. All right, let's turn our attention now to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the elections next year, early next year. Like, we're going to be talking about that race within a whisper of the November 5th election, because it's that important. A long-time, long-serving progressive justice is retiring, leaving an open seat. If conservatives are to win that seat, they take back control of the state Supreme Court. If they don't, then there's a chance that progressives control the court for at least a couple of more years by the time another progressive seat comes up, as those seats rotate through most years in those spring elections. So needless to say, conservatives, Republicans, national groups on the right will be coming for this Wisconsin Supreme Court seat next April with all the fury they can muster. On the progressive side of the ledger, there is one candidate announced who has some endorsements already. They're pretty good endorsements. Susan Crawford is a judge in Dane County, and she has already been endorsed by the four progressive justices on the court currently. And so with that, we welcome into the program Judge Susan Crawford to learn more about the Supreme Court race. Judge Crawford, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me this morning.
It's very nice to have you here. I know because I've covered enough of these things, how awkward it is to be campaigning for something that's not in the current cycle. But because of the nature of elections and you know, the time to campaign and everything else, you're starting to really get out there already introducing yourself to Wisconsin voters.
I sure am. And it's, you know, there are a few important elections on the ballot in November, no question. But on the bright side, there are a lot of people with a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm who are really engaged right now. And it's creating opportunities for us to get out there and meet a lot of voters. People are showing up.
And they most certainly will. For all, like I said, for all the talk of political fatigue and everything, Wisconsin voters, more so than almost any other state, have a propensity to answer the call when it comes time to choose their elected leaders. We're going to talk about your legal experience and groups that you've worked with or for, the endorsements, all kinds of things that qualify you. But I think first and foremost, certainly for me, the thing that's at the top of the list that qualifies you for a Supreme Court race is growing up here in Chippewa Falls. Clearly, there was something about your upbringing that was done right. Tell us about your Wisconsin roots.
Yeah, I'd love to. So, yeah, I grew up in Chippewa Falls with two brothers and a sister. My dad was an engineer, got his degree from UW-Madison on the GI Bill after serving in Korea. My mom is from the southern part of the state, from Greene County. She's a third-generation Wisconsinite. My great-grandfather started a barbershop on the square in Monroe, Wisconsin, way back in the 1860s. But I grew up in Chippewa Falls, had a great childhood there, went to public schools all the way through Hillcrest Elementary School, Chippewa Middle School, and then, of course, Chi High. I graduated in 1983. And it is a great place to grow up. And, you know, I wish every kid in Wisconsin had the opportunities that I had growing up to enjoy the outdoors and go to a great school and live in a safe neighborhood.
Sure. Well, let's continue going through the biography then. Folks want to learn more, they can look on her website, crawford4wi.com. That's Crawford, F-O-R-W-I.com. And it notes in there that your career began as an assistant attorney general with the Wisconsin Department of Justice. So tell us more about your early career.
Yeah. So I was hired by then Attorney General Jim Doyle at the Wisconsin Department of Justice in the late 90s, 1997, after going to law school at the University of Iowa and working my first couple of years out of law school at the Iowa Attorney General's office. So then Attorney General Jim Doyle stole me away from the Iowa Attorney General. I started working as a criminal prosecutor. Mainly prosecuting serious felony cases in the appellate courts. So that's the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. Oh. I first argued a case in front of the Iowa Supreme Court back in 1998, which is something that really made an impression on me as a young lawyer.
By the way, if folks here in the background, we again have to remind every guest, we are extremely pro-puppy. On the show. So if
my dog just got up.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there's anybody that needs attention or love, we are very, very much for that. So this always comes up in Supreme Court races. Invariably, somebody on one campaign or another will bring this to like law and order and criminal murder cases, even though that's such a small part of what a state Supreme Court actually does. But in your case, there is some very real criminal experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's something that I spent the first 9 years of my career working on. It was always important to me to make sure that in those cases that I was standing up for the rights of the crime victims and the safety of our community, but also making sure that the process was fair for the person who I was prosecuting. The system has a lot of safeguards, and part of my job as a prosecutor was to make sure that those are followed.
And then you moved into another area that I think is extremely important for anybody who would want to serve on a state Supreme Court, because as we have certainly learned through news headlines, state Supreme Courts take on matters related to, in this case, maybe squabbles between a legislature and a governor's office. So it's important to know about the inner workings of government and not have to learn that on the fly. And for you, that includes serving in multiple state agencies, you know, in the executive branch along the way. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So after Jim Doyle was elected governor, I had the opportunity, many opportunities throughout his 2 years or two terms in office for 8 years to serve in a variety of different roles. I served for a period of time at the Department of Corrections as chief of staff to the secretary there. So I had a view of the entire correctional system. I have visited many of our prisons in the state, talked to innumerable probation and parole agents, correctional workers, and inmates. And I think that's a really important perspective on the system to see it from that angle. I also worked at the Department of Natural Resources as head of the Division of Enforcement. So my job was to make sure that we appropriately referred cases to the Wisconsin Department of Justice for prosecution for serious violations of our environmental laws that are intended to make sure that we have clean air and safe drinking water and that our beautiful natural resources are protected. And then part of that job, too, was to make sure that the Department of Justice prosecuted those cases appropriately and got good outcomes for the state. And then finally, I worked at the governor's office as chief legal counsel, a very broad role that almost defies description because so many issues come through the governor's office on so many topics. But in general, my role was to make sure that we were applying and enforcing the laws fairly and equally throughout our state.
Judge Susan Crawford is our guest, Dane County judge and candidate for Wisconsin State Supreme Court. We're going to have more with Judge Crawford coming up in just a moment here. First, we're going to take a break. We'll have a little bit from the mailbag. Rob, I did not miss your good morning from Tigerton. We'll have that coming up in just a bit. But first, let's pause to let you know that wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Thursday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit. Kelsey Ballerini has a birthday today, turning 31 years old. We'll talk more with Judge Susan Crawford in just a moment about her state Supreme Court race. But first, couldn't miss Rob saying good morning from Tigerton. Sunny and 55 there today. Busy mowing lawns as we get close to the end of mowing season. Going to Shawano yesterday, he said he noticed the trees starting to change along Highway 29. My wife said as well, heading up and down Rice Lake, Highway 53, the leaves are starting to turn. Rob noted it's National Chocolate Milkshake Day and that he had one coming home from Shawano, and does remember watching the Monkees as a Saturday show back in the early 70s, and loved watching Bonanza. He says, I watch it when I'm not working. And Tristan texts in from Kenosha about our discussion earlier about healthcare policy and why aren't more conservatives embracing the Affordable Care Act since it started as a conservative idea. And Tristan writes, I can understand why Republicans have disdain toward our health care policy because the working person pays for insurance and gets charged immensely on top of it. But Republicans should be focusing on pharmaceutical companies and hospitals to lower the overall cost of services rather than taking health care from the poor. But God forbid they work hand in hand on something with the Democrats. Then again, you can text in your questions or comments at 855-75-CIVIC. You can text us your questions or comments, or you can use the Civic Media app to do the same thing. We're talking with Dane County Judge Susan Crawford, who's a candidate for state Supreme Court. And we've started this first interview with her with, of course, mostly biographical information so that you understand where she came from. And when we get into the portion of the interview now, in passing along that the four current sitting liberal justices have all endorsed her candidacy. And you say, well, you know, yeah, she worked for Governor Jim Doyle, but, you know, what else is it about the race that might come up? I think that's where we're getting into the heart of things now, Susan, where you say, where you note that you were a private practice attorney. You helped protect voting rights, workers' rights, and also represented Planned Parenthood to defend access to reproductive health care. And it is, you know, there is no denying that in the last Supreme Court race, reproductive health care rights were an issue. Frankly, every election since the Dobbs decision has featured this as well. So I'd like you to talk a bit about the values that you're bringing to this race and the qualities that you would have as a justice in these important areas to voters.
Great. Thanks, Pat. So the one thing I want to help people to understand that as a judge, I can't say how I would rule on any particular case that might be headed to the Supreme Court or in the Supreme Court. But I can tell you about my values, things I've worked on in the past, how I've chosen to spend my time, you know, using my legal skills and my experience in my career. And part of that has been really focused, well, you know, my entire career really has been focused on protecting people and upholding their rights in our courts. I do that every day as a judge. I want to make sure that I get the facts right, that I apply the law fairly and impartially and use some common sense doing so, and that the result that I order is one that is fair for the parties and just for the parties. So just with that background, on the topic of our democracy and voting rights, for example, those are issues that are perennially before our state Supreme Court. I think it's really important for the court to protect the right to vote, to make sure citizens have access to the polls, and that all of our voting and election laws are being applied and interpreted and enforced fairly to help people to exercise their right to vote. I think voters should be choosing their candidates, their elected officials, and that elected officials should not be the ones who are picking who votes for them and who their voters are. It's another important principle. On the issue of reproductive rights, you know, look, I'm a mom. I have two kids who are now young adults. I have been through pregnancy, labor, and birth. It's not for wimps. And I understand how important it is for women to have health care during those times and to have all the options available to them to make sure that they can make decisions about their bodies, about their pregnancies, that they're able to protect themselves.
So now, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me. You know, those values obviously mean something to the sitting justices right now, because you have Ann Walsh Bradley, who is retiring, and that is what has opened up this seat. Rebecca Dallet, Jill Karofsky, Janet Protasiewicz have all said that they're going to support your candidacy. So, I mean, what does that tell you to get their endorsements so early about where they feel like your values align with theirs?
Well, I think that they are doing a great job on the Wisconsin Supreme Court in making fair decisions. And I think that they have the same approach to the law that I do, which is that they understand and believe that it is really important to get to the facts. You know, truth is a really important value in our justice system. And part of what we're trained to do as a judge is to determine what the facts are. I think they agree with me about that. And they also want to make fair, impartial decisions. They're not there to push a partisan political agenda. And by the way, I believe my opponent in this race is in this race to push a very extreme partisan agenda. He's a longtime partisan politician, and I think that that is why he's running for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So I believe I've gotten those endorsements from those four justices because they, like me, believe it is really important to have a state Supreme Court that is standing up for the rights of Wisconsinites.
And that really gets us to the, you know, the last topic, the race itself. And if no other candidates get in, it's quite likely going to be you versus Waukesha County Judge Brad Schimmel. Brad Schimmel was the state attorney general from 2015 to 2019. And we know Wispolitics added up all the totals from the 2023 Supreme Court race and found a grand total of $56 million spent between the candidates, political parties, and outside groups. So the last thing to you, Judge Crawford, is like it or not, this is going to be a big, important, expensive, and probably at sometimes not very nice race. Tell voters why you feel you're up to it.
Well, I've got the experience, I think, that I need to run and run well. You know, I'm not a politician. I'm a judge, previously a lawyer, but I know how to pick a good team. And I have a great team assembled to run this race for me and with me, who are standing by me and helping me to make sure that I've got the resources that I need to run a smart race and to show the voters that I am a person with the right values, you know, that I am ethical, that I am fair, impartial, standing up for their rights. And they are helping me to get out all around the state of Wisconsin right now, where I can talk to voters and listen to them, primarily listen and make sure that I know what they're thinking and what's important to them. So I think we are well prepared to run a strong race here in Wisconsin.
And a strong race will be required because of what we know things are going to be like in Wisconsin coming right out of the November election into next year's February primary and April general. Judge Susan Crawford, so nice to get to meet you, and I'm sure we'll be talking again during the campaign. Thanks so much and have a great day.
Thanks so much, Pat. It was a pleasure.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk about the 8th Congressional District race, that one involving our friend Democrat Kristen Lyerly, on our Women Win Wisconsin segment powered by Motherhood for Good. That's next. You're up north. I feel like that song should have been blaring on a loudspeaker, blaring outside the debate auditorium earlier this week. This is Homecoming here on Up North News Radio, the Women Win Wisconsin segment, which was originally the brainchild of Sarah Godlewski. And then she got busy becoming Secretary of State and passed the reins on to Kristen Lyerly. And then she got busy with one of her many 17 jobs. She added another one to it, running for Congress. Now she is the guest on Women Win Wisconsin, powered by our friends at Motherhood for Good. So, Kristen, as happy as we are to see you, you're just going to have to sit over there in the corner, like all of our other guests, while I catch up with the hosts of the segment, Kate Duffy, Nicole Slavin. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
Good. Yeah. How are you?
You guys seem a little upbeat. I mean, anything happened recently? Like, was there a good presidential debate or something? Why are you looking so good?
Are you guys still riding high on that dopamine boost from that? That was like, I think that'll take me through at least next week.
Masterclass.
Mm-hmm. Masterclass is right. Absolutely. And I know that there were some folks that were like, well, you know, could you remember how they said Hillary Clinton was overprepared? And I thought, well, yeah, she's done a lot of arguments in court, but court isn't exactly the same as a debate stage. Will she be okay? Yeah, she was okay.
Fine. She,
and I kept pointing, going, that's why, you know, and again, Joe Biden, love him, everything, all thanks and praise to him. He was not my first choice going into 2020. It was Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, I all thought were great candidates. I thought if Joe makes it through, that's great too. And I was looking at the TV going, that's the Kamala Harris I was talking about, you know, but when you're vice president, you don't, that side of you doesn't get to come out as much for 4 years. So I'm glad we finally got to see, you know, who some of us already knew Kamala Harris was.
Yeah, she not only is she just like so ready and so intelligent, she has this emotional intelligence that is amazing. So you see her not only talk about all the facts and the policies, but also just bring warmth and realness to the conversation. And I think, you know, that's a big reason why people are so drawn to her and drawn to this campaign. So it was really cool to see.
And Nicole, from, you know, now let's get away from the warm fuzzies, from being able to turn to Donald Trump and just kind of tell him what's what. I mean, again, that was something that was visceral, watching him do that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we've sat for years and waited for somebody to do what she did effectively for, you know, 2 hours. It gave me life. No, it was wonderful to be able to see somebody have, you know, responses that actually pointed out how, you know, completely out of this world and nonsensical his responses are to things, and to be able to kind of hold him accountable and say the things that we've all been thinking for many years.
I'm looking at a stopwatch here, and this now sets the record. This is the longest we've kept Kristen Lyerly's mic off in all the times that she's been on Up North News Radio.
Oh, I have something to say too.
You are such a good sport. First off, how are you?
I'm so good. And you know what, Pat? You can go. We've got this.
Yeah, right, I know that. You were the first one, remember, 2 years ago with legislative candidates that I said, I trust you. You do the interviews. I'm just going to shut my camera off. And so, yeah, I always know I could turn things over to you guys. So what do you think? What's going on?
Well, I mean, with regards to the debate, I loved how disciplined Kamala Harris was. She never took the bait. Trump did that crazy thing that made you go, I want to respond to that. Like your gut wanted to respond to it. And she just stayed focused and said the things she needed to say. And, you know, I agree with you, ladies and Pat. I thought that she was absolutely incredible. That is the kind of leader that I want to see. And that is the kind of leader that the people I'm talking to at the doors and on the phones and at events want to see as well.
All right. Now, before I turn things over to Nicole and Kate for the rest of the questioning, I'm going to get this in first because we still have you on Monday mornings at 6:30, because you have been for a couple of years here and you are an absolute delight. And we talk just about whatever's in the news. We talk about, you know, pop culture, whatever. We don't touch very deeply on your congressional campaign. This is your slot to do that. And because I always feel like I'm not giving you enough due for the campaign itself. So I just want you to tell us how the campaign is going and you know, be quite open about, you know, what are the stakes, especially in a district that, you know, is not necessarily friendly to Democratic candidates.
It's so, so good. What we're hearing both in the district and really from across the country, the grassroots engagement has been overwhelming. People recognize that here in the swingiest district of the swingiest state, during the most consequential election of our lifetime, electing the first pro-choice OBGYN doctor to Congress is a game changer. That's me. So people get it. And we're loving all of the love that we're feeling.
I couldn't agree more. It's so exciting to see. And I think what really strikes me, and, you know, I live in the district, obviously, out talking to my neighbors and community often, is it isn't about being Republican or Democrat. It's about someone who stands up for the issues that matter to you. It's about the things that impact your daily life. And it's just so clear that you are the right person for the job in that way. And something I wanted to ask you about, and I know we were at an event earlier this week and this had come up, but just the story of women's reproductive rights, obviously something you're very passionate about, but rather than just talking about abortion, talking about family planning and miscarriages, things of that nature of, you know, this is a wide spectrum. It's not a one item issue. Could you talk a little bit about what you've heard? And I mean, I really feel like that's the issue that's going to get people to come out and vote for you the most.
Hey, I think it's that. And I think it's healthcare in general. Everybody, every single person I talk to wants the freedom to make their own personal healthcare decisions, whether we're talking about abortion or contraception, access to all forms of contraception. So you get to pick the one that works for you, because if you've used contraception, you know that sometimes things don't work for you for whatever reason, but also about preventive care? When do you choose to go in? What kind of options do you have to manage your blood pressure? If you're diagnosed with cancer, which is common, what are your options for treating your cancer? All of these things are things that we all want to be. We want to be in charge of those decisions. We don't want politicians telling us what we can and cannot have. So for me as a physician, whether it's in the exam room or out talking with people on the campaign trail, that's the number one thing. And people also recognize how having that freedom to make those decisions for yourself ties into everything else. It ties into all of the economic things. You hear that the economy is the number one issue for people. And you know, it is. It's the cost of food. It's the cost of gas. But if you don't have the freedom to make your own personal healthcare decisions and you're stuck doing something that you're not comfortable doing or something that doesn't work in your life, it has an economic impact on the way you live your life and a social impact and a community impact. It's all tied together. And what we need are leaders who are helping to solve these problems and give us the freedom and the opportunity that we all need to be able to live our best lives.
I love that. And I think, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like people are starting to get that a little bit more and get how complicated and nuanced and how big of an umbrella reproductive care is, and that it's not as black and white as I think you have said that politicians make it out to be. Mm-hmm. Are you getting the same sense that people are kind of learning more and understanding and leaning into the fact that it's actually a much wider scope of care?
I really do get that sense. And, you know, just think back to how different things were in 2020. When I ran for assembly in 2020 as an OBGYN doctor, I did not talk about abortion. Mm-hmm. I did not talk about birth control. We stayed far away from reproductive rights, especially here in Northeast Wisconsin, because we were afraid. This is a district known to be deeply Catholic. I grew up Catholic. And those are issues that are really hard to talk about. But what we've discovered over time, and we always knew that Catholics use abortion care and birth control at the same rate as everybody else, we just talk about it differently. So now that we're starting to have these conversations and we're talking about our own experiences with miscarriage, up to 50% of pregnancies end in miscarriage. This is not rare. Or abortion, 1 in 4 women in this country will have an abortion. This is not rare. 99% of sexually active people will use birth control at some point in their lives. This is not rare. So as we are making that space and having these conversations that we weren't having before, we are gaining a better understanding of how this is not a black and white issue. It is, as you said, Kate, deeply nuanced, and that requires us to have the ability to make our own healthcare decisions.
I've got one comment that's come in that I wanted to share through Facebook, and it's Brian saying, the only bad thing about Kamala Harris's performance in the debate is that Trump's obvious ignorance on women's issues seems to have frightened Tony Weed out of debating, Kristen. There seems to be a debate about debates, much like in the presidential race right now.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a debate. So we challenged my opponent to a debate a couple weeks ago, and the deadline was Monday. So we then issued a press release saying that we're just going to go ahead and do a candidate forum. Well, they came in at the last minute and said, wait a minute. So now we're trying to put the pieces together so that there will be a debate, because we really want the people of Northeast Wisconsin to know who their candidates are and what they stand for. So my fingers are crossed. I really look forward to the potential for a debate here.
Sounds good. Nicole?
Yeah, I think getting clarity on your opponent's views on a lot of these issues would be very, very helpful, straight out of his own mouth, I think would be extremely helpful. Building off of the previous conversation we were having, I'm just wondering, I think childcare fits in as like a next step very, very closely when you're talking about reproductive health care. And I know a lot of the moms that follow Motherhood for Good, and just moms that I know, that is an area of concern. Finding good quality childcare, access to childcare, being able to afford childcare is huge. Curious what you've heard as you've been out speaking with people, and what your thoughts are on how we could make that maybe a little better.
My kids are older now, but I have 4. And they were my kids when I was in medical school and residency. So childcare has been a huge issue for me personally. And in fact, many of my student loans that I'm still paying off are related to childcare expenses. We tried everything. We had au pairs. We had nannies. They went to centers. We did in-home. I mean, we did everything. And that made it possible for me to become a doctor. And that is what makes it possible for women to get an education, to participate in the workforce, to do the things that they need to do in their lives and for their families and for their communities. This should be a priority for our society, but clearly it's not. And when you see what's happening here in Wisconsin, when you see how hard it is for childcare providers to run their small businesses and how hard it is for families to access and afford that childcare, it's just, it doesn't make any sense that we don't value this as a society. So this is a priority for me, both personally and as a leader.
Right. And it ties back into what Kamala was talking about with the opportunity economy, because things like that and giving mothers and women the opportunity to have care that's affordable and go back to work raises the economy in other aspects. One more quick question I have to ask you about from the debate. So Donald Trump, again, brought up late term abortions. We were very happy to see him fact checked in real time by the moderator. I posted a video yesterday about Jessica Valenti talking about what he's referring to is palliative care for infants, you know, born who are incompatible with life. Is there anything that you can add to that conversation that helps people understand that that's not a real thing?
Can we do a whole other episode on that?
I know.
It makes me so crazy when I hear that Donald Trump or that Democrats want abortion all the way up until the time of birth and sometimes after. That is a lie. That is a lie. When people have abortions late in pregnancy, it's because there's something going on with the pregnancy that is incredibly painful. These are desired pregnancies. And often these are babies that are born that won't survive. So the best option, the least painful option for them and for their families is to wrap them up and offer that palliative care so their parents can hold them and care for them and just be with them for their entire short life. If you've been through this, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, it's really hard to understand and imagine. But these are the stories that they tear people apart. They tear apart families because they're so hard. So we need to talk more about this because I hate the way they message it. It's so unfair.
It's well, and it's so intentionally wrong. And you understand why it's so important that we keep a focus on this race and on talking about the issues honestly. Kristen, as always, great to see you. Thanks for giving us the update on the campaign. Kate, Nicole, always wonderful to see you guys. Have a great start to the weekend.
Thanks, moms.
Thank you.
When we come back, Earl Ingram's going to join us. His show follows here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We've got it together, baby.
In honor of the anniversary of the birth of Barry White. Again, you can get all the birthdays and notes in our history lesson, 6:50 weekday mornings here on Up North News Radio. On Thursdays, we normally turn things over to Luke Mathers to basically promote civic media at large, all the various shows. It's not always easy to get, you know, some of the hosts this early in the morning. A couple of them later in the day have used words I can't use on the radio when it comes to whether they could join us this early. Earl Ingram is up this early because his show follows this one on many civic media radio stations. Earl, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, it's good to talk to somebody who's up maybe even earlier than I am.
What do I always say? At my age, I'm waking up this early anyway. May as well get paid for it, you know? So it works out fine. Now, for folks who do hear Earl's show every day, some of this may, you know, sound redundant, and I apologize. But again, there's plenty of other stations here that are carrying other shows too. I think, for example, Bull Falls Radio, where you hear Chad Holmes coming up next. And so we've never really had a chance to get to meet Earl. In terms of, you know, the radio careers are funny things. Rare is the person who is at one station for, you know, 30, 40 years, there's usually some kind of a checkerboard with some of the pieces on the board missing. Earl, how do you best describe your radio history?
Well, it's been checkered, say the least. I'm not a guy who was trained in radio. I spent 35 years in the auto industry and used to call conservative talk show hosts across this state. And people would hear me debating Mark Belling, Jay Weber, Vicki McKenna, Charlie Sykes, debating them kind of on almost a couple times a week. I'd call their shows, and people heard that. The great former Green Bay Packer Hall of Famer and NFL Hall of Famer Willie Davis, who owned radio stations, heard me, and that's how I wound up getting an opportunity in radio.
That's amazing, because and I'm glad you name-checked some of those folks, because now I lived in Milwaukee from 1987 to 1991, which was about the time that Rush Limbaugh was taking off,
yes,
and Mark Belling was just getting started, and Charlie Sykes was about to get started. And I remember thinking at the time and talking to some of my Milwaukee colleagues, and I was out of the radio business at that point. And I said, I just don't think these shows are going to take root, you know, because it's just all anger, and it's extreme politics on one side. And I could not have been more wrong. But once we realized it had caught on, we then said, well, where's the alternative to this? And in the beginning, it actually came from people who would listen to the shows and call in. And that would be somebody like you who said, I'm not turning the radio off. I'm going to respond to this stuff.
That's absolutely correct. And what most people may not know is that conservative talk radio spread across the entire nation. Milwaukee was kind of like the epicenter. Clearly Rush Limbaugh initially, but Milwaukee was the epicenter for conservative talk radio, and Wisconsin especially, because after Scott Walker got elected, you can look at the conservatives who wound up in prominent positions, even once Donald Trump became president of the United States, who left Wisconsin and wound up in Washington, D.C., and many of the things that those people fought and talked about became part of Republican lexicon.
I know that when I talk about being out of the business, one of the things that took me out of it was that I was working up in West Bend, just north of you, at WBKV. And I'm a very young talk show host, and they actually, I was just the news guy, and they thrust me into the talk show role. And one of the bosses at the time said, well, all you need to know is that we're the capital of white flight up here. And so just say something that's going to stir the pot and people will call in. Well, that might be good radio, but it sure wasn't good for the civility of the Milwaukee area. And I feel like part of that antagonism on the radio is what has been a contributor to Milwaukee having some real rough patches when it comes to, shall we say, community harmony.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, it's why I would constantly fight back. And I'd constantly hear that talk about a city that I love, the place where I'm born and the place that I'm going to die. I'm 70 years old. I'm all right with dying in Milwaukee. I'm all right with having lived there for now over 70 years. And so when people say things that I know are not true about my community, I'm a guy who's going to push back on it. And that's how I wound up doing this.
I feel especially blessed to have been able to live in all these different places, from Little Rice Lake to Eau Claire to, you know, Milwaukee and Madison, and being married to a farm girl from Manitowoc County. And I mention all this just to say that, you know, you can put people in different, you know, circles. When it comes to the circle of understanding how very valuable and wonderful Milwaukee is, but also how very valuable and wonderful rural Wisconsin is, you know, there's not enough of us in that group yet. And Earl, I figure between you, some of the legislators I worked with from Milwaukee, and a few from rural Wisconsin, I feel like after years of feeling like I'm banging my head against a wall, we're starting to break through in helping people appreciate the largest cog in our state's economic engine.
Well, you know, it is still always amazing to me that the city of Milwaukee doesn't get that recognition. It's the economic engine. It always has been. It always will be. And the business community is aware of that. But people, yes, I think, outside of the business community aren't. And civic media affords the opportunity for us to be able to bridge that gap. And that's the beauty of it in all of these different shows and the different opportunities that we have to interact with one another.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Tell us what you got coming up this morning.
Well, I do a thing every Thursday called In the Pharmacy with Dr. Omar the Pharmacist. When you get to be around my age, you know, you need to know about medications. And so we do a great thing with Dr. Omar the Pharmacist as he talks about what medications we should take, what supplements we shouldn't take. And it may bore people like Greg. He's still a young guy, but you and I
know those youngins. Yeah, I know.
Bless you, Earl. Bless you.
Well, Earl, good. Have a great show with that. Thank you so much for the visit. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you bet. Have a great day. And again, you can hear Earl coming up. You can hear Earl coming up on some of these fine Civic Media radio stations. And Greg will be back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air. And then tomorrow we have our usual stable of great Friday guests, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. We'll have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel talking about his Saturday show on Civic Media. Mark Jacob will talk about how the press covered the debate. And we'll talk sports with Dan Schumacher. So thanks so much again for being with us today. Have a wonderful Thursday. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. up north.